أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وشفيع ذنوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا أبي القاسم محمد صلى الله عليه وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين. اللهم وصل على ولي أمرك القائم المؤمل والعدل المنتظر وحفه بملائكتك المقربين وأيده بروح القدس يا رب العالمين. واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم وغاصبي حقوقهم ومنكري فضائلهم من ليلنا هذا إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تعالى في كتابه المجيد، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: وإذ ابتلى إبراهيم ربه بكلمات فأتمهن قال إني جاعلك للناس إماما قال ومن ذريتي قال لا ينال عهد الظالمين. صلوات صل على محمد. We are looking at how to establish, or rather how to understand, the concept of imamat from the Holy Quran, given the ahadith that we have. And today, just to prove that the family of the Holy Prophet are the true Imams, I want to shed and discuss with you some light on the main and major ahadith that are accepted by all, with its true interpretation, so that tomorrow our confidence, our certainty, our yaqeen is not only enhanced, but when we discuss with those who ask this question, why do you think it is only Ahlul Bayt? Why do you confine yourself to Ahlul Bayt? It is not us, it is from the Holy Prophet, and these are the hadiths. And these hadiths are not only found in our books, they are found in books of Sunnis as well. So there is no question, all Muslims alike accept the hadiths. So where are they going wrong? And we shall see where. The first hadith that is a very common hadith that we have heard so many times, and also it is a hadith that is found in all books, and I don't need to take names of Sunni books or riwayats that are in Sahih Bukhari, Sahih Muslim, Musnad Ahmad. All these famous books of ahadith contain all the ahadith that we are going to discuss. The first hadith is Hadith al-Thaqalayn, which says, إِنِّي تَارِكٌ فِيكُمُ الثَّقَلَيْنِ كِتَابُ اللَّهِ وَعِتْرَتِي. Very famous hadith. That I leave behind two weighty things: the book of Allah and my family. And that these two will never separate until they meet me on the Day of Judgment. Fine. In fact, Musnad Ahmad, which is, if you talk to one of the six books of the Sunni, in that, this particular hadith has a slight variation. Inni tarikun fikumul khalifatain. I leave behind two things that will succeed me. So, there is this question that comes to my mind, and I am sure it will come to your mind, that if such a clear hadith is available, number one, why don't they accept it? And number two, why do they come up with an alternative? You know what the alternative is? إِنِّي تَارِكٌ فِيكُمُ الثَّقَلَيْنِ كِتَابُ اللَّهِ وَسُنَّتِ I leave behind two weighty things, the book of Allah and my way of life, my sunnah. Well, both these two answers are very political, and I will talk about it after I have talked of all the four ahadith, so that we understand that if there is so much clear evidence in their books, then why is it they do not accept the truth? The second hadith is the hadith of Safinat Nuh. This is an interesting hadith. مَثَلُ أَهْلُ بَيْتِي كَمَثَلِ سَفِينَةِ نُوحٍ مَنْ رَكِبَهَا نَجَى وَمَنْ تَخَلَّفَ عَنْهَا غَرِقَ وَهَوَى That the example of my family is like that of the Noah's Ark. Whoever boards it, whoever climbs into it is saved. And whoever decides to go away from it or to keep away from it is going to drown and be destroyed. So these are words of the Holy Prophet. And when we listen to this example, we feel, okay, fine, people during the time of Prophet Nuh were saved because of the ark. But do we understand, if we dwell deeply into this particular example and understand that number one, Safinatu Nuh climbing into the ark of Nuh was a command by Allah, not by Prophet Nuh. So when Allah, when the Holy Prophet says that following Ahlul Bayt is like climbing into Noah's Ark, is that it is Allah's command, not my wish. Number two, you know, the Quran talks about people who were left behind. Amongst them, Noah's own son. Prophet Nuh's own son did not climb the ark. So you open the Quran to see what was the discussion that transpired between Prophet Nuh and his son. Ya bunayya arkab, O my son, climb. Wala takun ma'al kafirin. And do not be amongst those who have no faith. That means that everybody who does not climb is either an unbeliever or with the unbelievers. May not necessarily be an unbeliever. Huh? Understand this. Prophet Nuh does not tell his son, لا تكن من الكافرين. He says, ولا تكن مع الكافرين. Do not be with the unbelievers. So Prophet Nuh's son, was he an unbeliever? Was he a kafir? History is silent on that. Huh? The Quran does not prove that he was a kafir. No. Because Prophet Nuh tells him, don't be with the kafir. Doesn't say don't be amongst or don't be from the kafirin. No. Number one. Number two, that the punishment of Allah, when it comes on the unbelievers and all those who associate themselves with the unbelievers. And number three, most important point here, Mufassirin say that remember, there was love between the father and the son. That love was a father-son relationship. Where Nabi Nuh was hurt, what is happening to my son? Prophet Nuh's son loved his father, but this love did not save him. So when we say we love Ahlul Bayt, when we say we like Ahlul Bayt, when we say we will die for Ahlul Bayt, if there is no following Ahlul Bayt, if there is no boarding into the ship of Ahlul Bayt, that love, that lip service is not going to help us at all. That is why only those who followed Prophet Nuh alayhi salam, who boarded the boat, who boarded the ark, were saved. Because they did exactly what Prophet Nuh told them to do. Prophet Nuh's son who died, who was drowned, was someone who thought that, you know, I'll go climb a mountain. But no, nothing saved him. And the third hadith, this is the second hadith. Again, both the hadith, hadith Saqalain, hadith Safinat Nuh, are a hadith that is found in all books. I am not repeating myself because I am not quoting a hadith that are found only in books of Shia. The third and the most important hadith is quoted from Jabir ibn Samara. Jabir ibn Samra is a close companion of the Holy Prophet. And this hadith is where Jabir narrates, the Holy Prophet says that Islam will continue with dignity. La yazalu al-Islam azizan. Right? Will continue with dignity and honor until there have been 12 successors. 12. And then he lowers his voice. Jabir says, I did not catch what the Prophet said. So I turned to others to ask them, what did the Holy Prophet say after 12 successors? And I was told that the Holy Prophet said, Kulluhum min Quraysh. Everybody, every one of them will be from Quraysh. This hadith is in Sahih Bukhari. This hadith is in Sahih Muslim. It is not in isolated books of the Sunnis. It is there in books. They claim that these books are the most true books, Sahih. Whatever is there is the gospel truth. Fine. I remember in Australia, in Sydney, you know, the Jamia Mosque of the Muslims, the largest mosque of the Muslims, is in an area called Lakemba. In Lakemba, there are around 40,000 Muslims. And the largest mosque there is called Masjid-e-Imam Ali. Masjid-e-Imam Ali, not Masjid-e-Ali. It is called Masjid-e-Imam Ali al-Islam. The Imam is Sheikh Tajuddin. Sheikh Tajuddin is a graduate of Al-Azhar. And I still remember in 1990 when I first met him, he was during a turbulent time because one of his lectures had condemned the Jews, outspoken, outright. He had mentioned the Jews and condemned him. So what the Jews did was that they wrote to the Home Ministry saying that this person must be immediately deported. Why? Because he is inciting hatred against the Jews. So the ministry was going to take steps to ban him, to deport him. When the 40,000 Muslims wrote to their MP in Lakemba, and I quote this because it is a story of success, huh? Their MP, the Member of Parliament of Lakemba, was the deputy head of Labour Party. And they said, you deport our Imam and you can forget our votes next elections. You know, Bob Hope, who went on to become the Prime Minister of Australia, was the MP for Lakemba. And the Muslims put their foot down. If you allow this imam of ours to be deported, we will not vote for you in the next elections. And it was that next election that was so crucial for him, for he went on to become the head of the party and the Prime Minister of Australia. The imam remained in Lakemba. Today he is there an Australian citizen. And this imam, last 2 years ago, in the month of Ramadan, invited the Shia alim and said, let us have a debate on radio. You know, there is a very large Muslim community in Australia, in Sydney. And also, there is a very large Shia community. There are nearly 80,000 Shias in Sydney alone. There are 250 to 300,000 Muslims in Sydney. So, very large presence. Mainly, there are the Turks, there are the Bosnians, and there are the Lebanese. This Imam, Tajuddin, invites the Shia Alim. Of course, there are now Iraqi Shias up to 15,000 who have moved after 1990-91. 2 years ago, there was this Munadara. And in that Munadara, they went on. The Shia brought his ahadith, that this is what we believe in, the differences between Shia and Sunnah. At the end of the lectures, at the end of the dialogue, these were 10 in a series, at the last end, when he was summarizing, Sheikh Tajuddin says, that look, I need help from my Sunni scholars. These are his words, huh? That I need help from my Sunni scholars to be able to answer one question that I cannot explain. One question. And that is, that how do I reconcile the number 12 successes which is there in Sahih Bukhari? How do I reconcile? If I take Khulafa Rashdun, there are only four. Abu Bakr, Umar, Uthman and Ali. If I take Banu Umayyah, you know how many rulers of Banu Umayyah were there? There were 14 Banu Umayyah rulers. So I can't get to number 12. You take Banu Abbas, you know, Banu Abbas, there were 37 rulers in Banu Abbas. There is no dynasty of rulers in the history of Islam that can give you a clear number of 12 other than the Ithna Asharis. Sheikh Tajuddin said this, says, I need an answer. I need to convince my... Sheikh Tajuddin did not become a Shia, for he says that becoming a Shia is more detrimental, because if I remain a Sunni, as the Imam of the mosque, I will have more access. Sheikh Tajuddin, Sheikh Mualib al-Samawi, Tijani al-Samawi in his book, Liyakuna Ma'a Sadiqeen, has said the same thing. The same thing. That how do I bring 12? And you look at any Muslim sect, whether it is within the Sunnis or whether it is within the Shias, apart from the Ithna Asharis, there is no other sect that can come up with a total of 12 successors to the Holy Prophet. Ayatollah Nasir Makarim Shirazi in his tafsir writes, he says, perhaps this is the hadith that if you couple it with the hadith of the Holy Prophet that says that there will be so many sects after my death, but only one of them is the right sect. If you pair them together, you find that it is our madhab that gives the total of 12 imams, which is the correct madhab. Now, I come back to the original question as to if in the books of history there is so much clear evidence that we are on the right path, then why is there so much hatred? Why is there lack of acceptance? Two things. We look at the initial stage in history. when the Holy Prophet had declared the declaration of Ghadir in front of a crowd, according to some historians, as many as 200,000. From that time, why was it that even at that time, when the Holy Prophet passed away, nobody raised an objection? Then what are we doing in Saqifa? Why are we electing Abu Bakr when the Holy Prophet only a few months ago, you know, you're talking from Hajj time to 28 Safar, just over 2 months, less than 3 months time, the Holy Prophet declared Ali as the successor. What are we doing here trying to elect Abu Bakr? Nobody complained. What was the reason? First, yes, out of the 200,000, there were so many who were outside Medina. There were many who were from Yemen, there were many who were from other places. Medina people were less than 200,000, agreed. But there must be at least, I should say, at least 5 to 10,000 people from Medina alone, if not more. Where are these people? Why did they not raise objections? The only reason known in history that they at that time did not raise any objection was because their hatred for Ali alayhi salam. They did not want Ali to come. The Holy Prophet, when he made the declaration of Ghadir, knew what was lying in store for Ali. Knew that if he declared Ali as his successor, these people are not going to like it. That is why Allah told him, "You declare, I will protect the message. You don't worry about it." وَاللَّهُ يَعَصِمُكَ مِنَ النَّاسِ Allah is going to protect you from people. Don't worry about people's reactions. Allah knew what was going on in the mind of the Holy Prophet. That if I declare Ali, these people are going to hate him. And why did those people hate him? Because those very people had fathers, had uncles, had cousins who fought the Holy Prophet in the Battle of Badr, in the Battle of Uhud. And who was the one who killed the most number of enemies in the Battle of Badr and Uhud other than Ali alayhi salam? So, this hatred for Ali prevented them from speaking the truth. And of course, after Imam Ali alayhi salam as the caliph, Banu Umayyah, who took their throne in Damascus, where Damascus there are ignorant people. Damascus did not know who the Holy Prophet was. Damascus did not know who Ali was. So Muawiyah exploited the ignorance and increased the hatred towards Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam. So this was done. Because of that, and the machinery of Banu Umayyah in fabricating ahadith, in controlling the media, in brainwashing the Muslims at that time, they went on relentless onslaught against the status of Ahlul Bayt. So the status, the true status of Ahlul Bayt was always hidden to those who understood. You only need to explore a little and you find that many Sunnis who try and explore further become Shias, but no Shia will become Sunni. Why? The evidence is there. So this is in the beginning. We understand why in the history of Islam there was so much differences. But now there is freedom. What is it? And here, I must point out that we as the followers of Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, We as the followers of 12 Imams, we have a tendency to declare all those against Ahlul Bayt or all those who do not believe in Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam as kafirs. And then all of them will go into Jahannam. Jannat Jahannam mara baap niche. You know, I declare anybody who doesn't believe in Ahlul Bayt will go. Because now times are different. Very interesting issue here that I am raising today. I know people may disagree, people may agree. I have evidence, I am talking from evidence. I am talking from quoting scholars. The question is that will all the Muslims, nearly 1 billion Muslims are there, the Sunnis, will they all go to the fire of hell because they did not believe in Ali al-Islam? Well, it's a question that has a reaction. You know, sometimes if you look at what happened in Pakistan, or rather what is still happening in Pakistan, where so many Shias have been killed and so many Sunnis have been killed, if you explore and find out why is it happening, you will find it is happening because the Shias call the Sunnis kafirs and the Sunnis call the Shias kafirs. Is there any other reason? No other reason. Is this justified? We were talking to Allama Murtada Al-Askari, may Allah grant him a long life, a famous historian, a well-known researcher. And we were a group of nearly 40 or 50 students talking to him. And suddenly we asked him, we said, is it allowed to openly celebrate the death of the second caliph? This is, I am narrating, I am quoting Allama Murtaza Al-Askari. You can go and ask him, he's still alive in Qum. By the way, he is one of the most renowned historians today. He has a whole university which studies Ilmul Hadith, that is the science of Ahadith, verifying what is right and what is wrong. Is it allowed for us to celebrate openly and curse openly the second caliph? Talking of Eid-e-Zahra is one of the days in our calendar that is a day for celebration, mashallah. It is truly an Eid, nobody doubts that. Huh? Don't think I am here that I don't believe in that. I believe to be happy when Zahra alayha salam is happy. There is no doubt about that. But at the expense of Muslims killing each other, that is the question to be understood. That when people in India and Pakistan carry out that celebration, what happens? There is a reaction. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran that don't curse the gods that are worshipped by the polytheists, lest they turn and curse your God. The Quran says. Can't we learn from the Quran that even of the gods of polytheists, the mushrikeen, the gods they worship, don't ridicule them, because Allah says there is a chance they will turn back and ridicule your God. If they do that, then you are responsible for it. So what happens when we outright in the open condemn what they believe? As a reaction, we have them condemning what we believe. How did that start? This question of whether, and this is a question of aqidah, this question of whether all the Sunnis will go to Jannah or Jahannam was asked to great scholars. The answer is found, and the answer varies of course. The answer of Allama Tabatabai in Risalatul Wilayah. The answer of Marhum Ayatullah Sayyid Abul Qasim Al-Khuy Ridwanullahi Alayh in Al-Tanqih, in his book. in that he answers. He says very clear, both the scholars, great scholars, learned scholars, both of them say the same thing, that we have to understand. Number one, those who hate Ali, bughdu Ali, will definitely end up in the fire of hell. Any questions? Any differences? No. There are no differences between scholars. That those who hate Ali will be questionable for their hatred of Ali and will go to hell. Number two, there are those who know the truth, that Ali is the true successor. Despite that, they don't believe in Ali as the true successor. Then even these will be questioned on the day of judgment. And these people may end up in the fire of hell because they decided to ignore the truth despite knowing it. Then number three, they say that there is a vast majority out there who don't know the truth. There is a vast majority out there who don't know the truth, who are ignorant of the truth, and are being led by the masses, are being led by their leaders. These people are not amongst those who will go to the fire of hell. So when we talk ill of the Sunnis, when we condemn and curse the Sunnis, we have to take care, to take heed, that a vast majority of them are the ignorant ones who need to be guided in ways that are better than just cursing. In fact, by cursing what they believe in condemning what they believe in, we are driving them away. And when we drive them away, we are responsible. We are responsible. So let us be careful and find ways in how we can get them, we can lure them into reading their own books, into understanding their own treasures, so that they may find the right path. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.